Welcome to Kids These Days. I'm Shanna Sheehy, the host of this brand new program. Kids These Days is a weekly show where we'll discuss topics related to family life and young people in South Central Alaska. This program is a place to both listen in and lend your voice to the issues we'll tackle. At Kids These Days, we're trying to build a community around the common experience of raising Alaska's kids. In fact, our motto is talking about raising Alaska's future today. And you might be wondering why I'm saying our and we all the time. Well, it's because I'm the host of the show, but I'm definitely not working alone. Along with our broadcast partners and sponsors, Jessica Cochran is our youth and families desk reporter. And Sarah Gonzalez, who's on the controls right now, is our show's producer and the person who will make sure all of what you hear here and more is available 24/7 online at our website. And we encourage you to go and check that out anytime. www.kidsthesedays.org. We also encourage you to be an active part of Kids These Days and the community that we're trying to create there. As you're about to hear, listeners are invited to take part in our discussions, and you can do that in a number of ways. You can write to us, mail@kidsthesedays.org, or you can call, and we really encourage you to do this. We've got a great toll-free number. It's 888-583-7234, and that spells 888-KTD-RADIO, and that's KTD for Kids These Days. And you can call that number at any time of day, right now or later, or even in the middle of the night if you wish. And if you don't reach us, leave a message with a question or a comment about an upcoming show topic, and that will be announced in the message, or you can find that out on the website too. We promise to do our best to let you know if your comments will be used when we go on the air. So now that we've gotten a little bit more acquainted, I'd like to introduce you to today's guest. Jennifer Aist works with Providence Hospital in Anchorage. She's the mother of four and a lactation consultant and educator. She developed the Parenting at Providence curriculum and created a popular series of classes that help adults with getting young children outside in the wilderness. Jen is the author of the recently published book, Babes in the Woods: Hiking, Camping, and Boating with Babies and Young Children. And that's what she's here to talk with us about today. Thank you so much for coming and welcome to the program, Jen. It's really a pleasure to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Maybe you could start by telling us a little bit about why it is that this book came to be in the first place.
Well, the book came to be after a long journey of me taking out my own kids out camping and backpacking in the backcountry and accumulating a whole bunch of different information and running into other people who had questions and wanted to kind of learn the same thing. So I started teaching a class, and in a desperate need for a better handout, outgrew this book.
And when you say class, like, tell me a little bit about those classes, because I remember hearing about them, and I know people who've gone, and I think at one point somebody even passed me one of the pamphlets that you handed out in one of those classes. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us what those classes are called and when they were offered?
The class is called Babes in the Woods, and it is offered once a year, Babes in the Woods. Then we have Babes in the Snow, and we also have a Babes on the Water class as well. But it started out one class, Babes in the Woods, and I think four people came the first year, and I had little snapshot pictures of all 100% my kids doing different stuff, showing people how we carried them, where they slept, all of that kind of stuff. And the next year, somehow it got out on the radio and television, and we got, I don't know, 80 or 100 people ended up coming. And so my little pictures didn't work, and I had to blow them all up into overhead projector size, because we were using overhead projectors back then. And over the years, we've improved our technology, and we have now a nice PowerPoint presentation, and it's just grown to become a class that people, I guess, seem to look forward to taking each year.
And so now that there's a book, are you still going to be offering those classes?
Yeah, definitely. And the class I offer here in Alaska is Alaska specific. I definitely focus on Alaska trails, Alaska cabins, things that are specific to Alaska, whereas the book is more applicable across the country. And so it would be useful if you were in Montana. It would be useful if you were in California. But the class is Alaska specific.
Well, great. And we have some Alaska specific questions that we'll be having you respond to here in a little bit. But first, I'd like to remind people that we're listening to Kids These Days. It's a new local program about child rearing in South Central Alaska. And if you have questions for our guest, Jen Aist, you can call our program by dialing 888-KTD-RADIO. That's 888-583-7234. This program and more related information can be found online as well at kidstheseDays.org. Across the country, concern is growing about the amount of time kids spend outside, or rather the amount of time they don't spend outside in contact with the natural world. Richard Liu's 2005 book, Last Child in the Woods, described this problem, and he named it the Nature Deficit Disorder. This book became a national bestseller. Our Kids These Days reporter, Jessica Cochran, spoke with Martin LeBlanc of the Children and Nature Network about the growing movement to help reconnect kids with nature.
With technology, kids can explore the world virtually via computer, follow along on undersea dives or mountain climbs, web chat with kids across the world. But Martin LeBlanc says the need for direct contact with nature goes back to prehistory. In America, he says, it's part of our heritage.
To see young people realize that they have this connection with the land and that their forefathers and mothers played such a role in them being there. And you can see it gives a sense of pride. And I think in a country of ours with such majestic and magical natural beauty that's celebrated in our songs and our anthems and our fabric of life, to have a generation that doesn't have a sense of that or have those experiences, I think can lead to a lack of pride as much as we should have because of our frontier heritage.
There's evidence to back it up. Studies show that kids who spend time outside are healthier, happier, and smarter.
And it shows it improves your academics. I mean, a study came out in California a couple of years ago that looked at outdoor schools and kids who went to them against kids who didn't, and it showed that there was a 27% rise in science test scores, and we're people who are struggling in science and math compared to others in the world.
LeBlanc is a board member of the Children and Nature Network, the group Richard Liu founded to help people across the country find resources and share ideas about getting kids outside. LeBlanc says that each effort is unique, tailored to its own community.
People go about differently in different communities. You know, in Roanoke, Virginia, there's a big nature family club that's really focused on angling and fishing. And communities have really come around about that. Then there's, in Chico, California, there's a dog walking club where people are now taking out their kids and just going walking their dogs every night and experiencing the outdoors. So, again, this is really about empowering local communities and not trying in any way to preach on how you should be getting kids outdoors, but trying to connect communities that are doing it and really share ideas and resources.
And the movement is growing. There are more than 70 grassroots efforts linked through CNNN aimed at getting kids outside. There are more than 50 nature clubs for families, small groups of families that have come together to get kids outside in nature and ended up building stronger ties in their local communities. The federal government is involved, too, with Michelle Obama's Let's Move Outside program and the president's America's Great Outdoors initiative. Martin LeBlanc says it takes more effort to get kids outside these days because there are a lot of barriers to overcome. Fear is a big one. Though abduction rates and murder rates are about the same as 40 years ago, there is more television coverage of them, and parents are more anxious about keeping their kids safe. Communities often aren't designed with the outdoors in mind, with little open green space, or no way to get to it easily. Kids are often heavily scheduled with long school days and after-school activities, and there are all the distractions of television and electronics. Studies show kids between 8 and 18 spend some 50 hours a week engaged with electronic media.
But I don't think electronics in any way is the enemy on this. I think there needs to be a balance, but obviously there's lots of ways that you can even use technology to get kids excited about the outdoors.
LeBlanc thinks Alaska could be a role model in the effort to get kids outside. People in the lower 48 often assume it's easy here, but it can still be a struggle. The barriers just may be a little different. Carmen Field is an educator and naturalist at the Ketchumak Bay Research Reserve in Homer.
You know, moose and bears are a real reason that a lot of kids in Alaska aren't getting outdoors with their parents or by themselves. And I think another barrier is severe weather. Kids in Fairbanks, some of them get used to 40 below, but many families, especially new families or people that have come from elsewhere, they're not used to really cold weather, and so they tend to stay indoors while the weather's really cold or if it's really rainy or really blustery.
Field works with the center's Kids in Nature program, which gives workshops to help teach parents ways around those obstacles, whether it's traveling in groups to keep animals at distance or how to dress to stay warm. Soon they'll begin distributing toolkits around the state so that other educators or groups can present the information in their areas. She's also chair of Homer's local coalition to promote kids getting outdoors. They hold an annual Kids Outdoor Day that introduces families to new trails, are producing a booklet for local parents, and come up with some pretty fun ideas. Among them, a giant mud wallow party held in the spring.
And we had about 50 kids and another, 20 or 30 parents, and then about 30 or 40 bystanders just playing in mud.
That mud party was so fun that the pit has become a permanent mud play area at one of Homer's parks. I'm Jessica Cochran.
Oh, give me a home where the buffalo roam, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day.
You're listening to Kids These Days on this listener-supported station. Call us and let us know what's on your mind. That's 888-KTD-RADIO, and those numbers are 888-583-7234. Babes in the Woods author Jen Ace is our guest today on Kids These Days, and I'm your host, Shanna Sheehy. Now, Jen, we just heard a story that Jessica Cochran did that was about the Children and Nature Network and some of the work that Richard Louv has been doing. Mm-hmm. Are you aware of that organization?
Yeah, that's a really great organization. Actually, their chief executive officer wrote a little blurb on my book, which was very exciting. And it is becoming more active in Alaska. We actually have some moms locally that have actually taken my class and read my book, and they started their own, what they're calling, little nature clubs, little family run kind of operations that are really affiliated with any outside agency or anything, where they're getting together and hiking. There's one called, I think they're called the Taiga Trekkers, and there's one called Skedaddle, and it's moms and babies and grandmas and dads and whoever that get together, and they go out hiking every week, and starting out with babies to get them hooked on nature from the get-go.
That's really great. And so does the Children and Nature Network sort of supply a structure or maybe some ideas for how groups can organize in our community?
They do. They have all sorts of downloadable information so that you can start your own nature club in your own community. And they have a map so you can look on it on their website and see in different communities across the country what's going on between classes, little nature clubs, whatever is going on. And so they've done a tremendous amount of work to pull that all together for folks across the country. And Alaska's starting to have little blips, more blips on their map than we have in the past. So that's exciting to see.
Yeah. And this term, the idea of nature deficit disorder, mm-hmm. we are in South Central Alaska. We do mm-hmm. sort of have nature truly surrounding us. Do you think that kids here are experiencing that? In your experience, do you think kids are in deficit of being outside?
I do, even up here. And when I talk to friends, I have a friend that works in New York City. She's the director of the Staten Island Park out there. So when I listen to her, we are way better off than they are in I suppose, other parts of the country. But I think even still, even though it is in our backyard, I don't feel like we are connecting with our backyard the way that we could or should.
Well, it's fun to hear that there's some groups going around and kind of making an effort to do that.
Well, I think there's strength in numbers, and especially when you're going out with young kids. And so if your girlfriend's doing something, that's exciting, and that makes it easier for you to go out. And I think you do it on a more regular basis, too. You may say you're going to go take your kid on a hike out every week, but life happens in between. But if it's on your calendar, 10 o'clock on Wednesday to show up at Flat Top Trailhead, you're a lot more likely to actually do it. And that's the point, is to get people out there.
Yeah. And one of the points that we have here on Kids These Days is that we want this to be a community conversation. Mm-hmm. And so we have some people who've called in to ask you questions about your experience and about your book.
Great.
So let's get to some of those.
Okay.
And let's hear first from Anne.
Hi, my name is Anne, and I'm calling from Anchorage. And I was wondering what you do to keep your children, especially small children, clean when you're out hiking all day long. Especially kids that are still in diapers.
That's a great question. Thank you, Anne. It's a challenge, and if you're someone that likes your kid to be totally spotless, you're going to have to let go of a little bit of that because they're not going to be totally spotless. That being said, especially when you bring up the diaper issue, that area does need to be kept clean. So I always bring out a waterless hand sanitizer, Purell, Avagard, whatever brand you like to use. I think that's a good idea. It kills everything on your hand. Of course, it doesn't wash it off, so you have a bunch of dead stuff on your hand, but, you know, find a creek or something and complete the deed. Diaper changing isn't really any different than it is anywhere else. You just bring along a little pad. You can be thin and small and compact, fit right in your backpack, or you can bring something bigger. Some families use their folding camp chairs, like the Crazy Creek chairs, and that doubles as their diaper station. So there's lots of ways to make that happen and to keep them all clean at the same time. And I think teaching your kids to wash up their hands is important. If you're on a longer trip and you have your stove, every night we heat up water and we get our little bandanas out and we do a little sponge bath. So that works too. Baby wipes are great also.
And then what about, to follow up on Ann's question, what mm-hmm. about once you've done a good diaper change, mm-hmm. then do you have any advice for how to keep, you know, say you're out for a couple of nights, how mm-hmm. do you keep those particularly nasty diapers from contaminating other parts of your camp?
Yeah, well,
or other parts of your pack.
Unfortunately, it is pack it in, pack it out. So you do have to carry it all out with you. I always just used Carr's bags, just plastic bags, and wrapped them up in that. There is a company called Locksack that makes a bag that is odor-proof, and it's basically a glorified Ziploc bag, a big one. And so you could put all of your trash in that, including diaper trash, and not have that stink up the rest of your pack or attract other animals, bear or whatever, that might potentially be interested for some odd reason in your child's poopy diaper.
And so that does happen, like just like a, you know, a salmon smell, a poopy smell could maybe.
Well, I mean, technically speaking, you want to be aware of anything that has human scent, and our poop has human scent in it. So if you're going to be a purist about it, you should keep that separate. I think people keep it separate for other reasons. The obvious ones.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's move on. We've got another call from Anchorage.
This is Barb. My question is, what can you suggest for keeping a 2-year-old on some kind of sleep schedule when she's in a backpack all day? She sleeps all day and then doesn't want to sleep at night. So my question is, what can I do about that? Thanks so much.
Okay, Barb. Wow, we're getting all the good ones here right off the bat. once again, their schedule does get pretty messed up. Obviously, when you're carrying them all day, a lot of kids will fall asleep. More so with the babies than the 2-year-olds, but the 2-year-olds can have that happen as well. If you can plan your hike, and I'm assuming that Barbara's talking about like a 2-day sort of backpacking or, you know, backcountry sort of experience. If you can time your moments where you're traveling, either boating or backpacking or hiking, whatever, to what would be a normal nap time, that'll help you out a lot. Obviously, some kids are more sensitive to the routines than others, and you know your child better than anyone else, so you have to kind of judge that. But and you might have to let the schedule go a little bit while you're out there, too. And isn't that kind of part of the point for us, too, as adults, is to not wake up right on time and to not have an alarm clock and to take advantage of that midnight sun and just go ahead and be up a little later.
And to maybe nap at 9 instead of noon or something
like
that.
See, I can laugh about this because I'm beyond napping phase with my kids. So,
well, why don't you tell us? This is a good segue into. I said that you were a mother, but how? What are the ages of your children now? How many do you have?
I have 4 children. My oldest is 13, and I have an 11-year-old son, and I have boy-girl twins who are 7.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So did you do a lot of backpacking and hiking and
Absolutely.
Boating and so forth when they were little?
Oh, yeah. They all were brought out from just a couple weeks old and on up. I just got back last week from taking my oldest 2 on Chilkoot Pass. We did a big backpacking trip. So we were gone for 9 days and 5 days of that on the trail. The rest was just car camping.
Wow.
But yeah, it was really phenomenal to see them at that age. And I didn't have to carry them or their stuff or anything else. We split up the tent equally between the 3 of us, and we split up the food evenly between the 3 of us. And they, from all those years of packing them and their diapers and their baby food and everything else, the payback's pretty awesome.
And so do you think, I'm assuming that you had all four of your children out mm-hmm. when they were infants. That's where, you know, some of your experience or most of your experience
Absolutely.
Comes from to write. Mm-hmm. So if some of this is about helping young children mm-hmm. from a very early age learn to mm-hmm. appreciate the outdoors mm-hmm. and the natural world, mm-hmm. It's, you know, were you successful in your own personal experience? Do you think that your efforts paid off in terms of their enjoyment now that you have teenagers?
You know, I do think so. And I can give you two examples of that. One, when we were just this last week driving through Canada, and as we're passing by lakes and stuff, and my daughter would oh, look out the window. Oh my gosh, I would love to paddle in that lake, or look over there. Wouldn't that be a fun mountain to climb? So the fact that they're excited and jazzed about it is really exciting to me. And I guess a couple years ago now, my son, they were doing some road construction near my house, and they were in the process of that. They cut down this whole swath of trees, and my son was absolutely mortified because he was worried about the habitat. He was 9 at the time, worried about the habitat of the animals that were there. So that was his land. That was where he went hiking and he went walking. Those were his woods, and he was pretty upset that those were being torn down. And I think that you could look at that as a testament to the fact that he is connected to the outdoors.
Yeah. Well, let's get back to some of our callers. We have a caller named Sally who called in from Anchorage.
Hi. I was wondering what your best advice for keeping kids at a comfortable temperature is, particularly at night when perhaps it's been warm or hot during the day, and it's still, you know, warm when kids are ready for bed, but you know the temperature is going to drop in the middle of the night. So how do you keep the kids at a really good temperature, cool during the day and warm at night? Thanks.
Nighttime questions and sleep and where do they sleep and how do you keep them warm all night? Probably the number one question that I get from families.
So?
Yeah, it's a big concern, and rightfully so. I mean, it could easily get down in the 40s at night and you're in this big tent. A lot of factors play into keeping your kids warm at night, and actually the tent is a big one. And if you have a really big tent, which a lot of family campers do, so it has room for the pack and play and everything else inside of it, that's a lot of space to heat. And so if you make your room smaller, that's naturally going to stay warmer. So not having the mega 10-person tent right off the bat can make a big difference there for you in terms of heat. Maybe not in terms of space and comfort, but it will in terms of heat. I always, even still to this day, I pack in my kids' sleeping bag right next to them. And when they were little, I kept it on me, an extra hat, extra pair of mittens, extra pair of socks, all of that kind of stuff. And I had it right there with me in my bag. So if during the night, if I was waking up and I was getting cold, I could just reach over and pop a hat on a head. And that made a big difference. But it depends on your sleeping bag too. And if you have a toddler in their own sleeping bag, which is obviously too long for them, you can cinch up the bottom of it with a piece of webbing or something. So instead of the child having to heat a 5-foot-long bag, they're heating a 3-foot-long bag. And so that's going to make that sleeping bag work a lot more efficiently for them too. So that's a big question. Yeah.
And so would you recommend, specifically with what you were saying about a toddler who may only be 3 feet tall and he's mm-hmm. got like a 5-foot long sleeping bag, mm-hmm. It's better to maybe buy the longer bag and then make it shorter somehow? They even make toddler size bags?
There are some cheapo ones on the market. They tend to be bulky and they tend to not be very warm. And I'm cheap, so I would rather buy a bag that they're going to have for 10 years than buy one that they're going to use for 1 or 2 summers. So I think you're going to get a better product that's going to last longer and save yourself a bunch of money just by going ahead and getting a good quality youth bag that, again, they'll have it for 10, 12 years. My 13-year-old's still in her child size bag. Mm-hmm. Heck, I can fit in a child size bag. So there you go.
How much different in size is a child size bag compared with a full adult size bag?
It can be a difference of a foot.
Okay.
Easily, or more, depending on the bag. Most youth bags are fitted for someone 5 feet tall and under.
So, in going back to what you said about mm-hmm. the tent being important, mm-hmm. and that if you have a lot of excess room in the tent, you just need a lot more heat to heat the whole thing.
Right, a lot of airspace.
Yeah. So, so how does a family, before you get out someplace mm-hmm. that's remote, how do you figure out what might be a good fit for you? What's the mm-hmm. recommendation you might have for
well,
that?
Well, if car camping tents tend to be bigger, and so they're going to tend to carry along with them the issues of that heating a lot of dead space. space. Whereas a backpacking tent is going to, by nature, be smaller. I would say most people I talk to already have some tent, maybe for their couple, maybe like a two-man tent. And if you're going out with a baby or one toddler, that's fine. You can easily squeeze a toddler in there in a two-man tent. A three-man tent, you'd have even tons of space going on around you. So, but if you could drive your car into the tent, it's going to be really too big probably to keep warm on a really cold night.
So maybe that's for if you plan on going on a tropical getaway and you're going to be camping, right? Then that's when you get that tent.
Right.
You need all that extra space to sort of kill it off. But
yeah,
not
if you're going to the Grand Canyon or Zion or someplace like that, then yeah, bring it on.
So is there any chance, I'm just imagining a family of, let's say, three, mm-hmm. and it's parents and a toddler,
mm-hmm.
and you're in a two-man tent and you're mm-hmm. fitting the toddler in there. Is there mm-hmm. any expectation that you're actually going to be rested in the morning, would you say?
Gosh, are you at home?
No, we're out. Let's say we're out in the Chugach somewhere.
No, I meant, are you rested at home when you're sleeping with the two-year-old?
Oh, that's a very good question. Let's say
normally you are.
Yeah, we're finally independent sleeping. Finally, the toddler is independently sleeping.
Okay.
And
well, that
own.
And that is a beautiful thing. Yeah, I think you can. And I think some kids actually sleep better in the woods, and some kids are up more. I tend to be up more when I sleep in the woods. I'm not a rock-solid sleeper when I'm outside. I tend to wake a lot more easily. So I think it just depends who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not a spa experience. You're not going out there to, like, you know, get your nails done with, I don't know, cucumbers over your eyes and sleep all day. You're going out there to play in the woods. So it's a different expectation. It's all about expectations.
Yeah, I can definitely see why that would be the case. Mm-hmm. How do you, as someone who has a lot of experience, do you have any kind of exercise that you do in your brain mentally to sort of prepare you for, you know, these are the mm-hmm. realistic expectations for me as I head out to do this adventure with my kids?
For myself, no, but I do lay it out for the kids, and I let them know ahead of time where we're going, what's going to be happening, what the weather's going to be like, so that they can start thinking about those things early on in the trip. And I did that when they were 2 years old, and I do it now when they're, you know, big kids. So I think I dump it on them. Let them take responsibility for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we were talking about gear as well as some mm-hmm. of these family dynamics that you're
right.
telling us about. And we have a comment that came from one of the KTD listeners.
Hi, my name is Jason, and I'm calling in from Anchorage, Alaska. And I have a daughter who's coming up on 14 years old. And I just wanted to share a comment about my own daughter's experience with getting exposed to the outdoors. When I was a child, I really loved the outdoors myself, but had a difficult time enjoying it because I was never clothed properly. And one of the best ways that you can ensure that your child is going to have a good time is to not skimp on clothing. Go ahead and drop some money, because every dollar you spend on good clothing is just going to increase their enjoyment and will ensure that the gift of the outdoors is something that stays with them for their entire life.
Would you agree with Jason?
I couldn't agree with Jason more. Absolutely. It's all about the right gear and the right experience, and he nailed it on the head there. If you have wet, cold, cranky kids, nobody's going to want to go out again. If your kids are warm and dry, then, yeah, of course they're going to have a better experience. I mean, don't you?
Yes, I definitely have a better experience when I'm warm and dry,
mm-hmm.
and I've packed the right things, and
right.
I don't wake up in a pool or a puddle of water in my tent or whatever it might be.
That's always a bummer.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for people who maybe it is a difficult experience when you're out there on a couple day backcountry trip? And have you ever really successfully gotten your children to sort of do an attitude reversal if things are looking kind of tough and not so much fun?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, definitely. Routinely. So it kind of depends on the fit. I would say one of my kids, I won't name her name because I'm sure I'll hear about it for the rest of my life if I do. But the younger daughter, she used to have quite a number of meltdowns on the trail. And we had to have some meeting of the heart, so to speak, on the trail to get to the other end. And it was kind of this... I'll be interested to talk to her when she's 20 about what these experiences were like with her. She's still young, too young, of course, now. But it's like, okay, here we are. We're 10 miles out. So, and you're not going any further, and there's nowhere to sleep here. So you have a choice. We can, you know, what do you want to do? You want to hike back to the car? That's 10 miles. You want to go whatever, however many more miles this way to camp? And then it kind of dumps it again back in their lap, and they have to make a decision and a realization that, oh my God, okay, I really do have to pony up here and deal with this. And they tend to turn around with that. It tends to, the reality of, okay, we're not in the middle of Anchorage and mom can't just drive me home really quick. We are out here and I got to deal with it. Yeah. And I have to admit, resorted to bribery on the trail. And we've done, I'll give you, five more spruce trees and you can have a handful of jelly beans. I admit it. There you go.
You're listening to Kids These Days on this listener-supported station. On Kids These Days, we're talking about raising Alaska's future today. And we'll be back to hear more from Jen Aist after this short break. Next week on Kids These Days, I'll be talking with Dr. Patricia Kuhl of the University of Washington. Dr. Kuhl is a leading research scientist in infant learning and language acquisition. She'll be sharing some of her findings and responding to your calls. Leave a question or comment for Dr. Kuhl. Call 1-888-KTD-RADIO. That's 888-583-7234. Or send us a message to mail@kidsthesedays.org. We'll also learn about some local resources for young kids, like PIC, also known as Programs for Infants and Children. And we'll explore how young kids can be exposed to traditional Alaska Native languages. So join me, Shanna Sheehy, next week on Kids These Days. That's Tuesday at 2 and again at 7, right here on KSKA. This is Kids These Days, a weekly program about youth and family issues in South Central Alaska. Today we're in the studio with Jen Aist. Jen is an educator, a mother, and an author. She wrote Babes in the Woods, Hiking, Camping, and Boating with Babies and Young Children. The guidebook was recently published by the Mountaineers Books. Before we get back to our callers' questions, let's go on a little camping adventure ourselves. Kids These Days contributor Jessica Cochran used to spend most of her summer weekends hiking, rafting, and camping. That is, until she had kids. Now her family still tries to get outside for adventures, but the methods have changed a little.
We are definitely not hardcore when it comes to camping. No backpacking for now. We're stuck on the road system, and we take plenty of shortcuts. We don't even set up a tent. We just push the roof of our van up.
Pulling the lever, pushing the other thing, pushing up the top. Click, click. There
you go. Ta-da! A bed for two kids. Fold down the back seat, a bed for two grown-ups. We do set up a tarp to cover our camp kitchen.
But you keep straightening out with me, okay?
But the truth is, on this recent trip to McCarthy, we eat most of our meals in restaurants. For us, the shortcuts make it doable, because not everyone is in favor of camping trips. Here's what my three-year-old son was chanting just before we left home.
Camping, no camping, bad camping, bad camping.
To mollify him, we packed all his favorite toys into our crowded van.
Bike, skateboard, scooter.
And he spends most of the time at our campsite tipping his skateboard back and forth over a log.
You have to, like, put this end up, then you do it on, then you, then that, then this wheel comes up the rail. Yeah, I can't do that very well, so.
Sometimes I wonder if it's worth it. Is he really experiencing any nature? Is it any different from being at the playground down the street? Lily is a little more into it.
Going to try to find a climbing tree. Want to come with me?
Yeah, come.
And eventually, Jackson is distracted from his skateboard.
What are you doing, Jackson?
One more.
Look what Daddy blew.
we walk by the river and find puzzle rocks, rocks that have broken apart in place, so we can put all the pieces back together, and other treasures.
This rock, it was in a hole over there in a big rock, then it scraped.
And of course, somewhere along the way, I decide it is worth it. Listening to the rain tap on the van roof, cozying up in bed all together in the morning, exploring new places, creating a memory we won't soon forget. It even has a theme song.
Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah. I only know that part.
Ting,
ting. Ting.
I'm Jessica Cochran.
Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah. Ting, ting. Walla, walla, bang, bang. Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah. Ting, ting, walla, walla, bang, bang.
Well, Janice, does any of that seem familiar at all to you?
Well, I never had a camper van, but yeah, the rest of it, absolutely. It sounds like they had a fun trip.
Absolutely. And it sounds like, while there might have been some resistance at first, there's a little warming up to it toward the end.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, I've mentioned several times that there's a bunch of different ways to get in touch with us at Kids these days. And you can call the 888 number, KTD Radio, that we've talked about. But you can also email us. You can send your comments and questions to mail@kidsthesedays.org. And here's one that came from Jennifer, and she's in Anchorage. And she writes, "We have two boys, ages one and almost four. Some of our favorite things to do outside in the summer are orienteering and geocaching. Both activities are like treasure hunts in which the boys get to help spot controls, which are flags and orienteering, and hidden treasure boxes, caches, and geocaching. It's a great way to get out on the trails and captivate the attention of our four-year-old. Anchorage has a great orienteering club that hosts meetings every Wednesday evening, and it's a really fun family sport. And Jennifer was kind enough to include website information for the Arctic Orienteering Club in Anchorage, and you can link to oalaska.org through us at kidsthesedays.org. So have you heard of the Orienteering Club, and have any experience in that, Jen?
I haven't done it at all myself. I do know some families that are very involved in it, and they love it, and it's a great way to involve the whole family in it. We've come across some geocache stuff when we've been out there, but we weren't looking for it, so we kind of just left it there. There's also letterboxing and other things like that, and I think they're great. I think it's a great way to get everyone engaged.
I don't know what letterboxing is.
It's basically the same thing, except there'll be a little art project inside the box. So they have stamps, and then you stamp your little notebook and leave a paper in there and stuff. They're all over the country.
Oh, that's really neat. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard of that before. Mm-hmm. There's lots of fun ways to get out and use technology, today's technology. Well, let's get back to some of our callers. Let's take the next one. I believe it's from Kurt.
Hi, my name's Kurt, and I have two young children. Love to be outside. I've been in the Massive area for about 3 years, and I'm interested in safe trails to take the kids on, something similar to Thunderbird Falls, maybe. I'd be carrying one in a backpack, so a gentle rolling hike is what I'm looking for. Anyway, just looking for ideas around, some kid-friendly trails, and appreciate any comments yet.
Okay, well, gosh, there's hundreds. In the Mat-Su area, I just did, I was just at Hatcher Pass, actually, 2 days ago, and I did the first part of the Gold Mint Trail all the way out. It's about 18 miles, but the first several miles of it, that's all I had time for. Very flat, nice wide, you could easily take a jogger on it. There's a great beaver pond with a great lodge and beaver dam right there that you can see really clearly, nice open country. I would totally recommend that one. So sometimes it's not necessarily, if you're into going into Eagle River, the first part of that trail going out towards Crow Pass. So the whole trail may not be appropriate, and Crow Pass would be a great example, but the first few miles, absolutely perfect for younger kids. So read the guidebooks, get all the ones that are out there. Falcon has a good one. 55 Ways is still a good one. And read the sections and find out where the steep parts are and whatnot. I find young kids do better when they can see the destination. So open tends to be a little bit better, or if there's something cool along the way. Girdwood's Hamtram is on the Winter Creek Trail is a huge hit with kids because that's a great destination to get to, and it's lots of fun to go over the gorge. But yeah, we're truly blessed with an amazing amount of trails here. I was just down in Orlando, Florida, and there were no trails. So we have a plethora of trails.
And our trails also have sometimes wildlife encounters, which can be part of the magic of being outside, but can also present its own kind of challenge. What kind of recommendations might you have in your book about how do you stay bear safe while you have little kids? Because I always look at them and think, wow, they look like they could be tasty. And I sure hope that doesn't happen.
Well, first off, traveling in numbers is always the safest way to go. And so certainly when you're out there with young kids, generally you tend to have a bigger group by nature, and they tend to not be a quiet group. So that makes a really big difference. I think you need to be bear safe wherever you are. You need to be bear safe in your neighborhoods and not leave your trash out. And that's in urban Anchorage. So and that's just good general advice as far as that's concerned. I don't think you should obsess on, I know people have a lot of fears about bears, and I try to acknowledge that, but on the same token, I don't know. I mean, how often do you hear about, you know, bear attacks with groups of, you know, with families? You just don't hear it that often. So keep a clean camp, do good bear safety techniques. I think you're going to be just fine.
And for South Central Alaska, what about moose? How do you be aware of and, you know, give moose the kind of space that they need when you're maybe trying to get down a path and they can sometimes be blocking your way? I've had that happen myself.
I go around them. If they're blocking the trail, I don't try to negotiate there. I just go back around. But, there's seasons when they're crankier than others. And it's the same thing with bears. You know, you shouldn't be going next to a salmon stream in the evening on your mountain bike with no bells and your kid in the back, during the salmon runs. And the same thing during rut, you probably shouldn't be out there on trails that are known to have lots of moose on them. And that's kind of that common sense piece taking over there. But I think you should teach your kids to be bear smart and to be moose smart. And if one of those large creatures is charging you or your child, you need to tuck them underneath you. You need to go to a big tree and cling onto that, or a big rock or something like that, and do all of those techniques. And I think kids should learn how to do that in a way that doesn't freak them out about it, but rather gives them a tool to deal with it in the unlikely encounter that they need those skills. That's true for all wildlife.
And how do you keep your kids from, what is that approach? Trying to make sure that they're aware that this is a serious issue, but you don't make it seem like a very scary thing.
It's a delicate balance. And I know people that, if you as the parent are completely freaked out over it, I guarantee you that's going to transpire to your kid. So you probably need to start with yourself and get educated yourself. REI's got a whole bunch of really great classes on bear safety. The Campbell Creek Science Center does classes. Eagle River Nature Center has bear safety classes. And to take those and learn it yourself so that when you are talking to your kids, that anxiety that is yours is not being transferred onto your kids. And instead, you're giving them sound advice.
Well, we have one more question, Jenny. So
okay.
Let's go to that last caller.
Hi, my name is Ray, and I'm calling from Anchorage. And Jen, I wanted to say your Babes in the Woods book is so interesting. I've been alternating with a bunch of other parenting books and just really enjoying it, learning a lot. And I was wondering if you could share some of your magic and wisdom for special high play value things that you could bring on some kind of a backcountry trip, tenting or staying in a cabin, that don't take up a lot of room and aren't real heavy, but could occupy kids while you're trying to cook or on a rainy day. So, you know, something besides small books. If you found some small things that really work well for your kids, that would be great. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rihanna. Another great question there. I always brought out books, and I brought them out in dry bags. So, and I know you're a big book person, too. So I think books are always good. I also like bug netting on a stick, like a butterfly net, because it's lightweight. You can stick it in the side of your pack. It's easy. They like to scoop minnows out of the water. They like to try to catch butterflies and flying things that are going around. So that's kind of fun. Maybe just a simple bucket or something like that that's lightweight. I like stuff that's kind of multi-purpose that we could actually use around camp for other things as well. When my kids were real little, we always brought out a set of stacking cups because we could scoop up water, we could collect pine cones in them, all sorts of stuff like that. But as soon as it's if you can wean them off of the plastic stuff and the other toys, and my house is inundated with them too, but if you can bring out less of that and start playing more with the stuff that's out there, it's less for you to carry, and it actually ends up being a lot more fun as well. For example, bringing out sticks and lining them up, or making little rock cairns with the kids, or rock towers, or whatever, skipping stones, things like that. So you can actually have quite a bit of fun just playing in the mud too. So I encourage kids to get into that. It's taken on a new level with my kids now. They're into some pretty cool fort building, something that I always had a lot of guilt and angst over until I read Richard Loeb's books, and he's a huge fan of building forts. And so the Leave No Trace people out there, I'm sure, are wagging their finger at me right now as I speak, but you should see some of the forts that they've built, which is basically playing with sticks gone a little bit more advanced. So the more you can just play with the stuff that's out there, I think the better off you'll be.
Well, I'd like to thank all of our callers that we've had participate in today's show. And I have one last question for you, mm-hmm. Jenny, before we say goodbye. And that is, can you let our listeners know where it is that they can find your book, Babes in the Woods, if they go looking for it themselves?
Cool. Yeah, definitely. Well, at Providence and the Nursing Boutique, we are selling it there. Tidal Wave is carrying it. REI has it. And actually, we have a class coming up at REI on August 11th from 6 to 7:30. And that's a free class. And there'll be slideshow and stuff. So that'll be a lot of fun. I know Barnes and Borders both have it online. I don't know if it's in their actual store, but those are the local anchored spots that at least that I've seen on it. And of course, online you can also get it from my website, wildernessforkids.com, and you can order it from there through Amazon.
Excellent. And we will link to your website from our website, which is kidsthesedays.org. Well, Jenny, cool. It has truly been a pleasure to have you in the studio today, and I really, really appreciate your time mm-hmm. and for being here with us on this debut program.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Jen Aist is the author of Babes in the Woods, a guide for getting out into the wilderness with little kids. Don't forget, the conversation does not stop here. Join in and lend your thoughts in our discussion in the forum that we have at kidsthesedays.org. You can also listen to this interview again or share this program with your friends. And speaking of friends, you want to be friends or fans of Kids These Days? We're on Facebook. You can fan or friend us there. And if you want to tweet, yep, you can get your updates that way too. Connect easily to both of those places by linking from our homepage at kidsthesedays.org.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows? What's on the other side? Rainbows are visions, but only illusions. Rainbows have nothing to hide. So we've been told, and some choose to believe it. I know they're wrong, wait and see. Someday we'll find it.
The Chugach National Forest is our forest right here in South Central Alaska. It includes 5.4 million acres of land and 10,000 glaciers and millions of trees. With its many lakes and trails, it's a playground for adults and for children too, especially now that it's been designated a children's forest. Our producer, Sarah Gonzalez, recently had a conversation about the Chugach Children's Forest, what it is, and how it's opening up the outdoors for kids. Here she is with Sarah Borio from the Public Affairs Office at the Chugach National Forest, and with Ann Mayo Kiley, the Program Director at Alaska Geographic.
Hi, Ann and Sarah. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
So, tell me, what is the Chugach Children's Forest?
Well, the Chugach Children's Forest is a symbolic designation for all of those 5.5 million acres of the Chugach National Forest, and the entire thing has been designated a children's forest. And what that means is it's an organizing force for engaging our increasingly diverse communities and all the benefits and stewardship of national forests and public lands. But it's underscored with real substantive programs, both existing programs that our Forest Service employees have led and developed over many, many years, and new ones that we're piloting with Alaska Geographic.
Thank you, Sarah. So, Anne, what kind of programs is Alaska Geographic piloting for children?
Well, Alaska Geographic's role in this is to partner with the National Forest and then also other public lands in the state to come up with innovative new ways to engage our communities, and especially youth, and make these areas more relevant. So some of the pilot programs we're looking at are youth expeditions that bring together teenagers from rural and urban communities in Alaska, working hand-in-hand with scientists, doing media projects, exploring some of the issues of their public lands. Some of the other programs we have are partnerships with schools, where we're working with teachers to incorporate outdoor service projects, media projects, projects on their public lands, partnerships with public lands professionals into their curriculum. We have a youth summit coming up in September where we're going to be bringing together 100 students from around the state to talk about youth issues, climate change, issues related to public lands in Alaska, share their...
Your programs focus mainly on middle school and teenage kids at the moment, is that correct?
The programs that Alaska Geographic is playing a lead in with the forest is mostly, yes, middle school and high school, because we're looking at really hands-on science, research-based, media-based projects. But there's some pretty cool programs that the Forest Service is leading for younger people as well.
So how do children get involved?
Primarily right now we're working through youth organizations and schools and select teachers or youth programs that connect us with students that are directly involved in our programs. However, we are increasingly building up our website with more information about how people, just parents, individual students can get involved. And that's at alaskageographic.org.
And additionally, on our three different ranger districts in our rural communities, that would be in Cordova, Girdwood, Moose Pass, Seward, our district offices in those communities take the lead in directly engaging with the schools. There's another avenue for people to get involved.
So tell me about a specific program. Do the kids go out for multi-days, or is it a day program, and who takes them out?
We have combinations there. During the school year, we're partnering with teachers mostly in Anchorage and Cordova, and most of those would be day outings, although through the King Career Center we do some camping trips during the school year as well. And then during the summer we do these extended day, anywhere from 5 days to 10-day expeditions where students are out away from home the whole time, camping out or living on boats. And who takes them out? It's collaboration, which is really at its root what the Children's Forest is, bringing together lots of people with a shared interest, pooling their resources. We have some scientists from universities who are involved, wildlife biologists and educators from the Forest Service who are involved, education specialists from Alaska Geographic and some other organizations. So it's really a group effort.
Do you find that the kids that you take out on these trips, that it's their first experience being outside, or are these more kids that already have been growing up playing outside and doing camping trips?
Some of both, definitely. We're very intentionally targeting students that haven't had a lot of these opportunities. And in some cases, it's kids who maybe have been camping or fishing a lot. And then in other cases, it's some students who have a little bit more science background, but maybe have never been camping before. And so it's kind of cool that they have very different backgrounds and they're teaching each other as well.
Is this a year-round program?
It is year-round. We have educators in classrooms across the forest, and there are other year-long activities.
It can be challenging, as many people know in Alaska, to get out during the winter, but we don't want that to be an obstacle. So a cool program that's happening that the Forest Service is running is they're taking some school kids from Anchorage. They do a day trip, explore Portage Valley on snowshoes in the middle of winter. And then we also are doing a lot of classroom-based work as well, that some students are helping to develop some management recommendations to make trails, campgrounds, facilities in the forest more appealing to younger people.
So what schools are you in? Are you in all the schools or just a few?
We're very actively partnering right now with the King Career Center in Anchorage, with Mears Middle School, with the Migrant Education Program in Anchorage. They've been a wonderful partner, with the Home Base After School Program, and then the Cordova School District, the Chugach School District. So it's growing slowly but steadily of which schools are involved. And really a lot of that is directed by a teacher who's a right fit for what we're doing and could really use some more resources to move forward.
Are these programs, are they free to children then?
So far, most of the programs have been fully funded by grants, contributions from partners, a lot of in-kind contributions that have helped fund it. A few of our programs have minimal fees to help cover some of the costs, but for the most part, programs for kids have been at no cost.
So why, in your opinions, is it important for kids to be experiencing the Chugach and the outdoors, and why does it matter?
Why does it matter? That's a great question. Well, I'm a parent. I have two young kids. Speaking personally for myself and what I see in my kids, it gives you the space to think, to imagine possibilities, to be inspired. People are becoming increasingly disconnected, and we want to help reverse that.
And Sarah, what about you? What kind of experiences have you seen kids have when they're out on these trips?
I really remember and experienced those benefits firsthand as a kid growing up in rural Alaska. And I see now, living in urban Alaska as an adult, how difficult it is for me, actually, to make that structured time to be connected to the outdoors. And I think about our kids growing up in urban America, urban Alaska, who maybe don't have those habits from their youth. Kids coming out of their shell, really, and exploring and gaining this confidence in nature and the outdoors, that is really just exciting. That confidence come out when they have the ability to play, engage, study, work in the outdoors.
And just have fun, I'm sure, with other kids their age, and realize that, yeah, I can go out and deep in the woods and stay the night and, you know, be tough and hardy and all of those things.
Yeah, it's real confidence builder.
It's interesting that even in Alaska, that there are still, with all of this natural beauty and being surrounded by the Chugach forest, that there are many children who just never get outside into it. Do you find that to be the case quite a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, I think in all the communities we've worked in, that's happening to some extent. And it's really apparent in Anchorage. And just as Sarah alluded to a little bit, and myself as a parent, it's hard to get out of Anchorage. Life gets really busy and hectic. If you have limited transportation, it's even though it's you're looking at it every day, it can be hard to get into these wild places. And if you're not experienced yourself in it, Alaska can be kind of intimidating of how to get started. You know, there's bears, there's glaciers, there's crazy weather, and how do you even get started? So we're trying to help get people started and then encourage them to stay involved.
So are parents able to be involved in these programs as well?
So we're looking for more opportunities to include families as well. That seems really important. We've done a few train trips where families, the students we've worked with on these expeditions, have been able to bring their families out for a day. Some of the schools that we've done projects with during the school year are looking for ways to include family days. And then the Forest Service and other public lands are increasingly offering more programs for families and kids of all ages.
What programs do you have coming up?
Well, we've wrapped up a really successful summer of kids out all over the Chugach National Forest and some really amazing employment programs all around the state.
And for 2011, we're going to be looking ahead to the United Nations International Year of the Forest. It's a really great opportunity to really raise awareness of the Chugach National Forest right here in everybody's big wild backyard.
So where online can teens, tweens, parents, caregivers go, teachers go to find out more about the Chugach Children's Forest?
Well, the best place right now, and it's not comprehensive yet, but the alaskageographic.org website has down the menu bar a link to the Children's Forest. And there is we're compiling more information there about how to get involved.
Okay. And we'll also provide a link to that on our website, kidsthesedays.org. This is Sarah Gonzalez, and I've been speaking with Anne Mayo Kiley from Alaska Geographic, the program director there, and Sarah Borio, the public affairs officer from the Chugach National Forest.
Thank you for joining all of us here today on Kids These Days. Join us each week right here on this station to hear discussions about raising kids and all the things that relate to that as far as family and community life goes. Join the conversation by calling 888-KTD-RADIO and get involved at kidsthesedays.org. Kids These Days is produced by the Content Producers Guild, and we're solely responsible for the content in this program. Jessica Cochran reported from Anchorage and from her camper van for this program. Sarah Gonzalez contributed content and served as today's technical director. I'm your host, Shanna Sheehy. Thanks so much for being here today, and we'll see you next time on Kids These Days. The ideas, opinions, and commentary you hear on the program are those of the host, guests, and contributors, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of our funders or broadcast partners. Kids These Days is made possible by a generous grant from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. The program is produced in partnership with KRUA 88.1 FM on the campus of the University of Alaska Anchorage, with the Journalism and Public Communications Department at UAA, and with KSKA FM 91.1, listener-supported public radio for South Central Alaska.